with Andrew. Probably he couldn't understand Tally's aversion to casual murder. He'd grown up with the cycle of revenge. It was just a part of his pre-Rusty life, like sleeping in piles or cutting down trees. He didn't see it as wrong any more than he could understand how utterly the latrine ditch revolted her. Tally was different from the villagers. At least that much had changed in the course of human history. Maybe there was hope after all. But she didn't feel much like talking it over with Andrew, or even giving him a smile. "So what's beyond the edge of the world?" she finally said. He shrugged. "Nothing." "There must be something." "The world just ends."
"Have you been there?"
"Of course. Every boy goes, 1 year before you become a man."
Tally scowled. "Another boys-only club."
"So, what does it look like? A wide river? Some kind of cliff?"
Andrew shook his head.
"No, it looks like the forest, like any other place. But it is the end. There are little men there who make sure you go no farther."
"Little men, huh?"
Tally remembered an old map on the library wall at her ugly school. The words, "Here be dragons," written in flowery letters in all the blank spots. Maybe this world's edge was nothing more than the borderline of the villagers' mental map of the world. Like their need for revenge, they simply couldn't see beyond it.
"Well, it won't be the end for me."
He shrugged again.
"You are a god."
"Yeah, that's me. How far are we now?"
He glanced up at the sun.
"We'll be there before nightfall."
"Good."
Tally didn't want to spend another cold night huddled with Andrew Simpson Smith, if she could help it. They saw no more signs of outsiders over the next few hours, but the habit of silence had settled onto the journey. Even after Tally had decided she was no longer angry at Andrew, she found herself covering the kilometers without uttering a word. He looked dejected by her silent treatment. Or maybe he was still moping about not getting his kill that morning. A bad day all around. Late afternoon shadows had begun to stretch behind them when he said,
"We are close now."
Tally came to a halt for a drink of water, scanning the horizon. It looked like every other bit of forest she'd seen since falling from the sky. Perhaps the trees were thinning a little here, the clearings growing larger and almost bare of grass in the growing cold of winter. But it hardly looked like someone's idea of the end of the world. Andrew walked more slowly as they continued, as if looking for signs among the trees. He sometimes glanced at the faraway hills to point out landmarks. Finally, he halted, staring with wide eyes into the forest. Tally took a moment to focus, then saw something hanging from a tree. It looked like a doll, a human-shaped bundle of twigs and dried flowers, no bigger than a fist. It swayed in the breeze, like a little person dancing. She could see more of them stretching into the distance. Tally had to smile.
"So those are the little men?"
"Yes."
"And this is your edge of the world?"
It looked like more of the same to her. Dense undergrowth and trees filled with squawking birds.
"The edge, not mine. No one has ever passed beyond it."
"Yeah, right." Tally shook her head. The dolls probably just marked the territory of the next tribe over. She noticed a bird perching close to one, regarding the doll curiously, possibly wondering if it was edible. She sighed and adjusted her backpack on her shoulder, striding toward the nearest doll. Andrew didn't follow, but he would catch up with her once his superstitions were disproved. Centuries before, Tally remembered, sailors had been afraid to sail into the deep ocean, thinking that sooner or later they would fall off the edge. Until someone tried it, and it turned out there were more continents out there.
On the other hand, maybe it would be better if Andrew didn't follow her. The last thing she needed was a traveling companion who was bent on revenge at any cost. The people beyond of the edge of the world certainly hadn't had anything to do with the death of his father, but one outsider would be as good as another to Andrew. As she grew nearer, Tali saw more of the dolls. They hung every few meters, marking some kind of border, like misshapen ornaments for an outdoor party. Their heads were at funny angles, she saw. The dolls all hung from their necks, nooses of rough twine around every one. She could understand how the villagers might find the little men creepy, and a slow chill ran down her spine. Then the tingling sensation moved to her fingers. At first, Tali thought her arm had fallen asleep, pins and needles spreading from her shoulder down. She adjusted the backpack, trying to restore her circulation, but the tingling continued. A few steps later, Tali heard the sound. A rumble seemed to come up from the earth itself, a note so low that she could feel it in her bones. It played across her skin, the world trembling around her. Tali's vision blurred, as if her eyes were vibrating in sympathy with the sound. She took another step forward, and it grew louder, now like a swarm of insects inside her head. Something was very wrong here. Tali tried to turn around, but found that her muscles had melted into water. Her backpack felt suddenly filled with stone, and the ground had become mush under her feet. She managed a staggering step backward, the sound fading a little as she moved away. Holding up a hand in front of her face, she saw it trembling. Maybe her fever had returned. Or was it this place? Tali stretched her arm out farther, and the vibrations in her fingertips increased, itching like an untended sunburn. The air itself was buzzing, growing worse with every centimeter her hand moved toward the dolls. It felt as if her flesh itself were repelled by them. She gritted her teeth and took a defiant step forward. But the buzzing swarmed into her head, blurring her vision again. Her throat gagged on her next breath, as if the air were too electrified to breathe. Tali staggered back from the dolls, sinking to her knees once the sound had faded. Tingle still ran across her skin, like a horde of ants swarming under her clothes. She tried to move farther, but her body refused. Then she smelled Andrew again. His strong hands lifted her from the ground, and as he half-carried and half-dragged her away from the line of dolls, the riot of sensation slowly faded. Tali shook her head, trying to clear the vibrating echoes. Her whole body was quivering inside. That buzzing, Andrew, I feel like I swallowed a beehive. Yes, buzzing, like bees, Andrew nodded, staring at his own hands. Why didn't you tell me? She cried. But I did. I told you of the little men. I said you could not pass. Tali scowled. You could have been more specific. He frowned, then shrugged. It's the edge of the world. It has always been this way. How could you not know? She groaned in frustration, then sighed. Looking up at the closest doll, Tali finally noticed what she'd missed before. It seemed to be made of twigs and dried flowers, natural materials, but it showed no signs of weathering. All of the dolls Tali could see looked brand new, not like handmade things that hung for days in a torrential downpour. Unless someone had replaced every single one of them since the rains, the dolls were made of something hardier than twigs. Something like plastic, maybe. And inside them was something far more sophisticated, a security system powerful enough to cripple human beings, but clever enough not to harm the trees or the birds. Something that attacked the human nervous system, drawing an impassable border around the villagers' world. Tali saw it then, why the specials could allow the village to exist. This wasn't just a few stray people living in the wilderness. It was someone's pet anthropology project, a preserve of some kind. Or, what had the Rusties called them? This was a reservation, and Tally was trapped inside. Holy Day.
You don't have a way across?
Andrew finally asked. Tally sighed, shaking her head. Her outstretched fingers felt the tingling here, and they had every other spot she'd tried over the last hour. The line of dolls stretched unbroken as far as she could see, and all of them seemed to be in perfect working order. She stepped back from the edge of the world, and the prickling in her hand subsided. After her first experience, Tally hadn't tested the barrier further than the tingling stage. Once was enough for that. But she was fairly certain that all the other dolls had just as much punch as the one that had brought her to her knees. City machines could last a long time, and there was plenty of solar power up there in the trees.
No, there's no way.
I did not think so, Andrew said. You sound disappointed.
I'd hoped you might show me what is beyond.
She frowned. I thought you didn't believe me, about there being more. Andrew shook his head vigorously.
I believe you, Tally. Well, not about the airless void and gravity, but there must be something beyond. The city where you live must be real.
Lived, she corrected him, sticking her fingers out again. The tingling feeling traveled through them, feeling uncannily as if she'd sat on her hand for an hour or so. Tally stepped back and rubbed her arm. She had no idea what sort of technology the barrier was using, but it might not be very healthy to keep testing it. No point in risking permanent nerve damage. The little dolls hung there, mocking her as they danced in the breeze. She was stuck here, inside Andrew's world. Tally remembered all the tricks she'd pulled back in Ugly Days, sneaking out of dorms to cross the river at night, even crashing a party in Paris's mansion after he turned pretty. But her ugly skills didn't necessarily apply out here. As she'd learned in her conversation with Dr. Cable, the city was an easy place to trick. Security there was designed to stimulate Ugly's creativity, not to fry anyone's nervous system. But this barrier had been created to keep dangerous pre-Rusty villagers away from the city, to protect campers and hikers, and anyone else who might have wandered out into nature. These dolls weren't likely to succumb to Tally's tinkering with the point of her knife. The thought of ugly tricks sent Tally's hand to the slingshot in her back pocket. It seemed like an unlikely way to trick the edge of the world, but maybe the direct approach was worth a try. She found a smooth, flat stone and loaded it up, leather creaking as she drew it back. Tally let fly, but missed the nearest doll by a meter or so.
Guess I'm a little out of practice.
Youngblood, Andrew said. Is that wise? She smiled. Afraid I'll break the world? The stories say that the gods put these here to mark the edge of oblivion.
Yeah, well, they're more like keep out signs, or keep in, I guess,
as in keeping you guys in your place. The world goes on a whole lot farther, trust me. This is just a trick to keep you from knowing it. Andrew looked away, and Tally thought he was going to argue some more, but instead, he knelt and lifted a rock the size of his fist. He pulled back his arm, took aim, and hurled it. Tally saw from the moment it left his hand that the stone was dead on target. It struck the nearest doll and sent it spinning, the noose tightening around its neck. Then the doll spun the other way, unwinding like a top.
That was brave of you, she remarked.
He shrugged.
As I said, young blood, I believe what you say. Maybe this isn't really the edge of the world. If that is true, I want to see beyond.
Good for you. Tally stepped forward and thrust out a hand. No change. Her fingertips buzzed with the latent energy in the air, the ants crawling up her arm until she pulled away. Of course. Any system designed to last for decades in the wild, surviving hailstorms, hungry animals, and lightning strikes, was probably more than a match for a few rocks. The little men are still doing their thing. She rubbed life back into her fingers. I don't know how to get past this place, Andrew, but nice try. He was staring down at his empty hand, as if a little surprised at himself for challenging the god's work. It is a strange thing to want to go past the edge of the world, isn't it? She laughed. Welcome to my life. But I'm sorry to bring you all this way for nothing. No, Tally. It was good to see. She tried to read his expression, a mix of puzzlement and intensity. To see what? Me getting serious nerve damage? He shook his head. No. Your slingshot. Excuse me? When I came here as a boy, I felt the little men crawling inside me and wanted to run back home. He looked at her, still puzzled. But you wanted to sling a rock at them. You don't know some things that every child knows, but you are so certain about the shape of this planet. You act as if... He trailed off, his knowledge of the city language failing him. As if I see the world differently? Yes, he said softly, his intense expression deepening. Most likely, Tally thought, it had never occurred to him before now that people could see reality in completely different ways. Between surviving outsider attacks and getting enough food to live, villagers probably didn't have a lot of time for philosophical disagreements. That's the way it feels, she said. Once you get off the reservation, I mean. Once you go beyond the edge of the world. Speaking of which, do you know for sure that no matter what direction we walk, we'll run into these little guys? Andrew nodded. My father taught us that the world is a circle. 7 days walk across. This is the nearest edge to our village. But my father once walked around the entire compass of the world. Interesting. You think he was looking for a way out? Andrew frowned. He never said. Well, I guess he didn't find one. So how am I going to escape this world of yours and get to the rusty ruins? Andrew was silent for a while, but Tally could tell he was thinking, taking one of his interminable delays to ponder her question. Finally, he said, You must wait for the next holy day. The next what? The holy days mark when the gods visit, and they will come in hover cars. Oh yeah? Tally said. I don't know if you figured this out yet, Andrew, but I'm not supposed to be here. If any elder gods see me, I'm busted. He laughed. Do you think I'm a fool, Tally Youngblood? I listened to your story about the tower. I understand that you have been cast out.
Cast out?
Yes, young blood, you bear this mark. His fingers brushed her left brow.
Mark? Oh, right.
For the first time since meeting the villagers, Tally remembered her flash tattoo. So you think this means something? Andrew bit his lip, dropping his eyes from her brow.
I am not sure, of course. My father never taught me of such things. But in my village, we only mark those who have stolen.
Yeah, sure. But you thought I was marked somehow? He looked up sheepishly. Tally rolled her eyes. No wonder the villagers had been so confused by her. They'd thought the flash tattoo was some kind of badge of shame.
Listen, it's just a fashion statement. Or, let me put that another way. It's just something that me and my friends did to amuse ourselves. You notice how it moves sometimes?
Yes, when you are angry, or smiling, or thinking hard.
Right. Well, that's called being bubbly.
Anyway, I ran away. I didn't get cast out.
And they'll want to take you home, I understand. You see, when the gods come, they leave their hover cars behind when they walk in the forest.
Tali blinked, and then a smile spread across her face. And you'd help me steal from the elder gods?
He only shrugged.
Won't they get cranky with you?
Andrew sighed, stroking his non-beard as he considered this. We must be careful, but I have noticed that the gods are not perfect. You escaped their tower, after all.
Well, well, imperfect gods. Tali allowed herself a chuckle.
What would your father say, Andrew?
He shook his head.
I am not sure, but he isn't here. I am the holy man now.
That night, they camped near the barrier. Andrew said that no one, outsiders or otherwise, would be likely to venture this close to the dolls at night. It was a place of superstitious dread, on top of which no one wanted to get their brains fried when they woke up and stumbled off into the darkness to pee. The next morning, they began a roundabout journey back to Andrew's village, taking their time, avoiding the outsiders' hunting grounds. It took 3 days, during which Andrew displayed his knowledge of the forest, mixing villager lore with scientific knowledge he'd picked up from the gods. He understood the water cycle, and a little about the food chain, but after a day of arguing about gravity, Tali gave up. When they neared the village, it was still almost a week before the next holy day. Tali told Andrew to find her a cave to hide in, one near the clearing where the gods parked in their hover cars. She had decided to stay out of sight. If none of the villagers knew she had returned, they couldn't give Tali away to the elder gods, and she didn't want anyone getting blamed for harboring a runaway. Andrew headed back home, where he planned to tell how the young blood had passed through the edge of the world and to the beyond. Apparently, the villagers knew how to lie after all. At least the holy men did. And his story would be true, once Tali got her hands on a hover car. She was no expert at driving, but she'd taken the same safety course that every ugly took at 15, learning how to fly straight and level and how to land in an emergency. She knew that some uglies went trick riding all the time and said it was easy. Of course, they'd only stolen idiot-proof cars that flew on a city grid. Still, how much harder could it be than hoverboarding? As Tali waited out the days in the cave, she couldn't stop wondering how the other Crims were. While her own survival had been an issue, it had been easy to forget them. But now that she had nothing to do all day but sit and watch the sky, Tali found herself slowly going crazy from worry. Had the Crims escaped the Special's pursuit? Had they found the new Smokies yet? And, most important, how was Zane? She could only hope that Maddie had been able to fix whatever was wrong with him. She remembered their last minutes before he'd jumped from the balloon, the last words he'd said. In all of Tali's tattered memories, she'd never experienced anything like that moment. It had felt beyond bubbly, beyond any trick, like the world would change forever. And now she didn't even know whether he was still alive. It didn't help Tali's state of mind that Zane and the other Crims had to be just as worried about her, wondering if she'd been recaptured or had fallen to her death. They would have expected to see her at the Rusty Ruins at least a week ago, and had to be thinking the worst by now. How long would it be before even Zane gave up, deciding she was dead? What if she never made it out of the reservation? No one's faith could last forever. When she wasn't driving herself crazy, Tali also spent the time wondering about Andrew's confined world. How it had come to exist. Why were the villagers allowed to live out here when the smoke had been ruthlessly destroyed? Maybe it was the fact that the villagers were trapped, believing old legends and stuck in ancient blood feuds, while the Smokies had known the truth about the cities and the operation. But why keep a brutal culture alive, when the whole point of civilization was to curb the violent, destructive tendencies of human beings. Andrew visited her every day, bringing her nuts and a few root vegetables to go with her dehydrated god food. He wouldn't give up on bringing strips of dried meat until she tried it. It tasted like it looked, as salty as seaweed and harder than an old shoe. But she gratefully accepted his other offerings. In return, Tali told him stories about home, especially those that showed how the city of the gods wasn't all divine perfection. She explained about uglies and the operation, how the beauty of gods was just a technological trick. The difference between magic and technology was lost on Andrew, but he listened intently. He'd inherited a healthy skepticism from his father, whose experiences with the gods, it turned out, hadn't always left the old holy man full of respect. Andrew could be frustrating company, though. He made some brilliant leaps of insight, but other times he was just as thick as could be expected from someone who thought the world was flat. Especially when it came to the boys in charge thing, which she found particularly annoying. Tali knew she should be more understanding, but was only willing to cut Andrew so much slack, being born into a culture that assumed women were servants didn't make it okay to go along with the plan. After all, Tali had turned her back on everything she'd been raised to expect. An effortless life, perfect beauty, pretty-mindedness. It seemed like Andrew could learn to cook his own chickens. Maybe the barriers around Tali's pretty world weren't as obvious as the little men hanging in trees, but they were just as hard to escape. She remembered how Paris had chickened out as he'd looked down on the wild from the balloon, suddenly unwilling to jump and leave behind everything he'd known. Everyone in the world was programmed by the place they were born, hemmed in by their beliefs. But you had to at least try to grow your own brain. Otherwise, you might as well be living on a reservation, worshipping a bunch of bogus gods. They arrived at dawn, right on schedule. From overhead came the roar of two cars, the kind that specials used, each with four lifting fans to carry it through the air. It was a noisy way to travel, the wind roiling the trees like a storm. From the mouth of her cave, Tali saw a huge cloud of dust rising up from the landing area, and then the whine of their rotors cycled down into a riot of frightened bird calls. After almost 2 weeks of natural sounds, the powerful machine sounded strange to Tali's ears, like engines from another world. She crept toward the clearing in dawn light, moving in total silence. Rehearsing her approach every morning, Tali had become familiar with every tree along the way. For once, the elder gods were going to face someone who knew all their tricks, and a few of her own. She watched from undercover at the clearing's edge. Four middle pretties were unpacking the car's cargo holds, pulling out digging tools, hover cameras, and specimen cages, loading everything onto carts. The scientists looked like campers dressed in bulky winter gear, field glasses hanging around their necks, water bottles dangling from their belts. Andrew said they never stayed more than a day, but they looked ready for weeks in the wild. Tali wondered which one was the doctor. Andrew worked among the four pretties, lending a hand as they arranged their equipment, being a helpful holy man. When the carts were all packed with gear, he and the scientists pushed them into the forest, leaving Tali alone with the hover cars. She hoisted her backpack and approached the clearing warily. This was the trickiest part of the plan. Tali could only guess what sort of security the hover cars had on board. Hopefully the scientists hadn't thought to use more than childproof minders, the simple codes that kept littlies from flying off with a car. Surely the scientists wouldn't suspect the villagers of knowing the same tricks as a city kid like Tali. Unless they'd been warned that there were runaways in the area. That was nonsense, of course. No one knew Tali was stranded out here without a board, and she hadn't seen a hover car since the night she'd left the city. If the specials were looking for her, they weren't looking around here. She reached one of the cars and peeked into its open cargo door,
finding nothing but pieces of packing foam shifting in the soft breeze. A few more steps brought her to the window of the passenger cabin, also empty. She reached for the door handle. A man's voice called from behind her. Tully froze. After 2 weeks of sleeping rough, her clothes torn and dirty, she might pass for a villager from a distance. But once she turned around, her pretty face would give her away. The voice called out again in the villager's language, but it was inflected with the late pretty's gravelly air of authority. Footsteps were coming closer. Should she dive into the hover car and try to make it away? The words faded as the man grew closer. He had noticed her city clothes under all the dirt. Tally turned around. He was equipped like the others, with field glasses and a water bottle, his crumbly face a picture of surprise. He must have been sitting inside the other hover car, moving a little slower than the rest of them. That's why he'd caught her. "Good heavens!" he exclaimed, switching languages. "What are you doing out here?" She blinked, pausing for a moment, a vacant look on her pretty face. "We were in a balloon."
"A balloon?"
"There was some kind of accident, but I don't remember exactly." He took a step forward, then his nose wrinkled. Tally might look like a pretty, but she smelled like a savage.
"I think I saw something on the feeds about balloons going wrong, but that was a couple of weeks ago. You couldn't have been here that..."
He looked at her torn clothes, his nose wrinkling again.
"But I suppose you have."
Tally shook her head. "I don't know how long it's been."
"You poor dear." Recovering from his surprise, he was now all late pretty concern. "You're okay now. I'm Dr. Vallon."
She smiled like a good pretty, realizing that this must be the doctor. A bird watcher probably wouldn't know the villager's language after all. This was the man in charge. "It feels like I've been hiding out forever," she said. "There are all these crazy people out here."
"Yes, they can be quite dangerous."
He shook his head, as if still not believing that a young city pretty had survived out here for so long.
"You're lucky to have stayed clear of them."
"Who are they?"
"They're part of a very important study."
"A study? Of what?"
He chuckled. "Now, that's all very complicated. Perhaps I should tell someone we found you. I'm sure everyone's very anxious to know if you're okay. What's your name?"
"What are you studying out here?"
He blinked, perplexed that a new pretty was asking questions instead of whining about getting home. "Well, we're looking at certain fundamentals of human nature."
"Of course. Like violence? Revenge?"
He frowned. "Yes, in a manner of speaking, but how..."
"I thought so." All at once it was becoming clear. "You're studying violence, so you'd need a violent, brutal group of people, wouldn't you? You're an anthropologist?" Confusion still played across his face.
"Yes, but I'm also a doctor, a medical doctor. Are you sure you're all right?"
A realization hit Tally.
"You're a brain doctor." "We're called neurologists, actually." Dr. Vallon warily turned to reach for the hover car door. "But perhaps I should make that call."
"I didn't get your name."
"I didn't give it."
Her tone stopped him cold.
"Don't touch that door," she said.
He turned to face her again, his late pretty composure crumbling.
"But you're... pretty?" "Think again." She smiled. "I'm Tally Youngblood. My mind is very ugly. And I'm taking your car." The doctor was quite afraid of savages, it seemed, even beautiful ones. He meekly allowed himself to be locked into the cargo container of one of the hover cars and handed over the takeoff codes to the other. The security was nothing Tally couldn't have tricked herself, but it saved time. And the expression on Dr. Vallon's face as he gave her the codes was pretty indeed. He was used to dealing with villagers in awe of his godhood. But one look at Tali's knife, and he'd realized who was giving the orders. The man answered a few more of Tali's questions, until no doubt remained in her mind what this reservation was all about. This had been the place where the operation had been developed, from which the first test subjects had been drawn. The purpose of the brain lesions was to deter violence and conflict. So who better to experiment on than people caught up in an endless blood feud? Like rabid enemies in a locked room, the tribes trapped within the ring of little men would reveal anything you wanted to know about the very human origins of bloodshed. She shook her head. Poor Andrew. His whole world was an experiment, and his father had died in a conflict that meant precisely nothing. Tali paused a moment in the hover car before taking off, familiarizing herself with the controls. They seemed about the same as a city car, but she had to remember that this wasn't idiot-proof. It would fly into a mountain if you told it to. She would have to be careful in the high spires of the ruins. The first thing she did was put her boot through the communication system. She didn't want the car telling city authorities where it was. Tali! She started at the shout, peering out through the front windows. But it was only Andrew, and he was alone. She slid out of the driver's door, waving for him to be silent and pointing at the other car. "I've got the doctor locked up," she hissed. "Don't let him hear your voice. What are you doing back here?" He looked at the other hover car, eyes widening at the thought of a god imprisoned within, and whispered, "I was sent back to see where he was. He said he would be just behind us." "Well, he's not coming, and I'm about to leave." He nodded. "Of course. Goodbye, young blood." "Goodbye," she smiled. "I won't forget all your help." Andrew was staring into her eyes, the familiar pretty odd expression coming over his face. "I'll not forget you, either." "Don't look at me that way." "What way, Tali?" "Like a god. We're just humans, Andrew." He looked at the ground, nodding slowly. "I know. Not very perfect humans. Some of us worse than you could imagine. We've done awful things to your people for a long time now. We've used you." He shrugged. "What can we do? You are so powerful." "Yeah, we are." She took his hand. "But keep trying to get past the little men. The real world is huge. Maybe you can get far away enough that the specials will stop looking for you. And I'll try to..." She didn't finish the promise. "Try to do what?" A smile broke across Andrew's face, and he reached out to touch her flash tattoo. "You are bubbly now." She nodded, swallowing. "We will wait for you, young blood." Tali blinked, then hugged him wordlessly. She slid back into the hover car and started the rotors. As the whine of its engines built, she watched the birds scatter from the clearing, terrified by the roar of the god's machine. Andrew backed away. The car rose at her first touch on the controls, its power shuddering through her bones. The rotors whipped the treetops around her into a frenzy, but the car rose steadily, under control. Tali looked down as the car cleared the trees and saw Andrew waving up at her, his crooked, gap-toothed smile still hopeful. Tali knew that she would have to return, just like he'd said. She no longer had a choice. Someone had to help the people here escape the reservation, and they had no one else but Tali. She sighed. At least one thing was consistent about her life. It just kept on getting more complicated. The Ruins. Tali reached the sea while the sun was still rising, painting the water pink through the low clouds out on the horizon. She angled the machine northward in a slow, even turn. As she'd expected,
This out-of-city car had a scary tendency to do whatever Tally asked of it. Her first turn had been sharp enough to bang her head against the driver's side window. This time, she was taking it easy. As the car gradually climbed, she soon spotted the outskirts of the rusty ruins. A distance that would have taken a week on foot had shot by in a blur below Tally in less than an hour. When the sinuous shape of the ancient roller coaster came into view, she began to bank the craft inland. Landing was the easy part. Tally pulled the emergency bar, the one they taught littlies to use if their driver had a heart attack or passed out. The car brought itself to a halt and began to descend. Tally had picked a flat spot, one of the many giant concrete fields that the Rusties built to park their ground cars in. The vehicle settled onto the weed-choked ground, and Tally opened her door the moment the car bumped to a stop. If the other scientists had found the doctor and made some sort of emergency call, the specials would already be looking for her. The more distance she put between herself and the stolen hover car, the better. The spires of the ruins rose up before Tally, the tallest about an hour away on foot. She was, of course, arriving almost 2 weeks after the others. But hopefully they hadn't given up on her. Or maybe they'd left a message of some kind. Surely Zane would have stayed, waiting in the tallest building, unwilling to leave while there was still a chance she would show up. Unless, of course, their escape had come too late for him. Tally shouldered her backpack and started to walk. The ruined streets were full of ghosts. Tally had hardly ever walked in the city before. She had always cruised around on a hoverboard, 10 meters up, at least, avoiding the burned-out cars down at ground level. In the last days of Rusty civilization, an artificial plague had spread across the world. It didn't infect human beings or animals, just petroleum, reproducing itself in the gas tanks of ground cars and jet aircraft, slowly making the infected oil unstable. Plague-transformed petroleum burst into flame when it came into contact with oxygen, and the oily smoke from the sudden fire spread the bacterial spores on the wind into more gas tanks, more oil fields, until it had reached every rusty machine across the globe. The Rusties hadn't liked walking, it turned out. Even after they'd figured out what the plague was doing, panicked citizens still jumped into their funny, rubber-wheeled ground cars, thinking to escape into the wild. If Tally looked hard enough, she could see crumbling skeletons through the smeared windows of the cars, jammed onto the ruined streets. Only a few of the people back then had been smart enough to walk out, and strong enough to survive the death of their world. Whoever had engineered the plague had definitely understood the Rusties' weakness. "Boy, you guys were stupid," Tally muttered at the car windows. But calling them names didn't make the dead Rusties any less ominous. The few intact skulls just stared back at her with empty expressions. Farther into the dead city, the buildings grew taller and taller, their steel frameworks rising up like the skeletons of giant and extinct creatures. Tally took a winding path through the narrow streets, looking for the tallest building in the ruins. The huge spire was easy to spot from a hoverboard. But from the ground, the city was a tangled maze. Then she turned a corner and saw it, chunks of old concrete clinging to the towering matrix of steel beams, the empty windows gazing down at her, jagged shapes of bright sky showing through. This was definitely the place. Tally remembered when Shay had taken her up to its top the first time she'd come out to the rusty ruins. There was only one problem. How was she going to get up? The innards of the building had long since rotted away. There were no stairs, and hardly any floors to speak of. The steel frame made it perfect for a hoverboard's magnetic lifters, but there was no way for a person to climb it without serious mountaineering gear. If Zane or the new Smokies had left a message for Tally, it would be up there. But she had no way of reaching it. Tally sat down, suddenly exhausted. It was like the tower in her dream, without stairs or elevator, and she'd lost the key, which in this case was her hoverboard. All she could think of was to hike back to the stolen car and fly it up there. Maybe she could bring it close enough beside the building, but who would hold it in a steady hover while she climbed out onto the ancient steel frame? For the thousandth time, Tally wished that her board hadn't been wrecked. She stared up at the tower. What if no one was up there? What if, after traveling all this way, Tally Youngblood was still alone? She got to her feet and yelled as loud as she could, "Hey!" The sound echoed through the ruins, sending a flock of birds into flight from a distant rooftop. "Hey, it's me!" Once the echoes faded, there was no sound in answer. Tally's throat felt sore from yelling. She knelt to dig a safety flare out of her backpack. A fire would be pretty obvious down here in the shadows of the cavernous buildings. She cracked the flare open, holding its hissing flame away from her face, then cried out again, "It's me, Tally Youngblood!" Something shifted in the sky above. Tally blinked away the spots that the flare had left in her eyes and stared into the bright blue sky. A shape drifted away from the towering building, a tiny oval that began to grow slowly. The underside of a hoverboard. Someone was coming down. Tally tossed the flare onto a pile of rocks, her heart pounding, suddenly realizing she had no idea who was descending to meet her. How had she been so dim-witted? It could be anyone up there on the board. If the specials had caught the other Crims and made them talk, they would know this was the planned meeting place, and Tally's latest escape was about to come to a sudden end. She told herself to calm down. It was a hoverboard, after all, and only one. Surely if specials had been lying in wait, they would have rushed out from every direction in a bunch of hover cars. In any case, there was no point in panicking. She wasn't likely to escape on foot now. The only thing to do was wait. The safety flare sizzled out to a sputtering death while the hoverboard descended slowly, hugging the metal frame of the building. Once or twice, Tally thought she saw a face peering over the edge, but against the bright sky, it could have been anyone. When it was only 10 meters overhead, Tally found the nerve to cry out again. "Hello?" Her voice sounded shaky in her ears. "Tally," someone called back, the voice familiar. The hoverboard settled beside her, and Tally found herself staring into a thoroughly ugly face. The forehead too high, the smile crooked, a small scar cutting a white line through one eyebrow. She stared at him, blinking in the gloom of the broken city. "David?" she said softly. Faces. He stared at her, of course. Even if she hadn't shouted out her name, David knew her voice. And he had been waiting for Tally, after all, so he must have known from the first cry who was down here. But the way he stared at her, it was as if he were seeing someone else. "David," she said again, "it's me." He nodded, still speechless. But it wasn't pretty awe that had caught his tongue, that much Tally realized. His gaze seemed to be searching for something, trying to recognize what the operation had left of her old face. But his expression remained unsure and a bit sad. David was uglier than she remembered. In Tally's ugly prince dreams, his imbalanced features had never been so disjointed, his unsurged teeth never so crooked or discolored. His blemishes weren't as bad as Andrew's, of course. He looked no worse than Sussy or Dex, city kids who'd grown up with toothpaste pills and sunblock patches. But this was David, after all. Even after her time with the villagers, many of them toothless and scarred, his face sent a shock through her. Not because he was hideous, he wasn't, but because he was simply unimpressive. Not an ugly prince. Just ugly. And the weird thing was, even as she had these thoughts, her long-suppressed memories were finally flooding back. This was David, who had taught her how to make a fire, how to clean and cook fish, how to navigate by the stars. They had worked side by side, traveled together for weeks on end, and Tally had given up her city life to stay with him in the smoke. She'd wanted to live with him forever. All those memories had survived the operation, hidden somewhere inside her brain. But her life among the pretties must have changed something even more profound. The way she saw him. As if this wasn't the same David in front of her anymore. Neither of them said anything for a while. Finally, he cleared his throat. "We should probably get moving. They sometimes send patrols out around this time of day." She looked at the ground. "Okay. I've got to do this first." He pulled a wand-like device from one pocket and swept it over her. It stayed silent. "No bugs on me?" she said. He shrugged. "Can't be too careful. You don't have a board?" Tally shook her head. "It got damaged in the escape." "Wow. Takes a lot to break a hoverboard." It was a long fall. He smiled. "Same old Tally. I knew you'd show up, though. Mom said you'd probably..." He didn't finish. "I'm fine." She looked up at him, unsure of how much to say. "Thanks for waiting." They rode his board. Tally was taller than David now, so she stood behind him, hands around his waist. She'd abandoned her heavy crash bracelets before her long trek with Andrew Simpson Smith, but her sensor was still clipped to her belly ring, so the board could feel her center of gravity and compensate for the extra weight. Still, they went slowly at first. The feel of David's body, the way he leaned into the turns, was so familiar. Even the smell of him set her memory spinning. Tally didn't want to think about how she smelled, but he didn't seem to have noticed. She was amazed at how much was coming back. Her memories of him seemed to have been ready and waiting, and were all flooding in now that he stood next to her. Here on the board, with David turned away from her, Tally's body cried out to hold him tight. She wanted to take back all the stupid, pretty-minded thoughts she'd had at her first glimpse of his face. But was it just that he was ugly? Everything else had changed as well. Tally knew she should be asking about the others, especially Zane. But she couldn't bring the name to her lips, couldn't speak at all. Just standing on the board with David was almost too much. She kept wondering why it had been Croy who'd brought her the cure. In Tally's letter to herself, she had been so certain that David would be the one to rescue her. He was the prince of her dreams, after all. Was he still angry that she had betrayed the smoke? Did he blame her for his father's death? The same night she'd confessed everything to David, Tally had gone back to the city to give herself up, to become pretty so she could test the cure. She'd never had a chance to explain how sorry she was. They hadn't even said goodbye to each other. But if David hated her, why had he been the one waiting in the ruins? Not Croy, not Zane, David. Her head was spinning, almost like being pretty-minded again, but without the happy part. "It's not far," David said. "Maybe 3 hours, traveling tandem like this." She didn't answer. "I didn't think to bring another board. Should have known you wouldn't have one, since it took you so long to get here." "I'm sorry." "No big deal. We just have to fly a little slower." "No, I'm sorry for what I did." She fell silent. The words had exhausted her. He let the board coast to a stop between two towering husks of metal and concrete, and they stood there for a long moment, David still facing away. She rested one cheek on his shoulder, her eyes beginning to burn. Finally, he said, "I thought I would know what to say
once I saw you. Forgot about the new face, didn't you?
I didn't forget, exactly. But I didn't think it would be so... not you.
Me either, Tally said, then realized her words wouldn't make sense to him. David's face hadn't changed, after all. He turned around carefully on the board and touched her brow. Tally tried to look at him, but couldn't. She felt her flash tattoo pulsing under his fingers.
Tally smiled. Oh, is that freaking you out? It's just a crim thing to see who's bubbly.
Yeah, a tattoo keyed to your heartbeat, they told me. But I hadn't imagined one on you. It's so... weird.
It's still me inside, though.
It feels that way, flying together.
He turned away, tilting the hoverboard forward and into motion. Tally held him tighter now, not wanting him to turn around again. This was hard enough without the confused feelings that rose up every time she looked at him. He probably didn't want to look at her city-made face either, with its huge eyes and animated tattoo. One thing at a time.
Just tell me, David, why did Croy bring me the cure instead of you?
Things got messed up. I was going to come for you when I got back.
Got back? From where?
I was scouting another city, looking for more uglies to join us, when the specials came in force. They started to make huge sweeps of the ruins, looking for us.
He took her hand and pressed it to his chest.
My mom decided to get out of town for a while. We've been holed up in the wild.
Leaving me stuck in the city, she said, and sighed. Maddie wouldn't have a problem with that, I guess.
Tally had little doubt that David's mother still blamed her for everything. The end of the smoke, Az's death.
She didn't have a choice, David protested. There's never been so many specials before. It was too dangerous to stay here.
Tally took a deep breath, remembering her little chat with Dr. Cable.
I guess special circumstances has been recruiting lately.
But I hadn't forgotten about you, Tally. I'd made Croy promise to bring you the pills and your letter if anything happened to me, just to make sure you had a chance of escaping. When they started to pack up the new smoke, he figured we might not be back for a while, so he snuck into the city.
You told him to come?
Of course. He was my backup. I never would have left you alone in there, Tally.
Oh.
Dizziness swept over her again, as if the board were a feather spinning toward the ground. She closed her eyes and held David tighter, finally grasping the solidness and reality of him, more powerful than any memory.
Tally felt something inside herself depart, a disquiet that she'd hardly known was there. The torment in her dreams, the worry that David had forsaken her, had all been over a mix-up. Just plans that had gone wrong, like in old stories when a letter arrived too late or was sent to the wrong person, and the trick was not killing yourself over it. David had wanted to come for her himself, it turned out.
Of course you weren't alone, he said softly. Tally's body stiffened.
By now he knew about Zane, of course. How was she supposed to explain that she'd simply forgotten David? It wouldn't seem like much of an excuse to most people. But he knew all about the lesions. His parents had raised him knowing what pretty-minded meant. He had to understand that. Of course, in reality, it wasn't as simple as that. Tally hadn't forgotten Zane, after all. She could see his beautiful face right now, gaunt and vulnerable, the way his golden eyes had flashed just before he jumped from the balloon. His kiss had given her the strength to find the pills. He had shared the cure with her. So what was she supposed to say? The easiest thing was, how is he?
David shrugged. Not great, but not too bad, considering. You're lucky it wasn't you, Tally.
The cure is dangerous, isn't it? It doesn't work for some people.
It works perfectly. Your pals have already all had it, and they're fine.
But Zane's headaches.
More than just headaches, he sighed. I'll let my mother explain it to you.
But what?
Tally let her question fade into silence. She couldn't blame David for not wanting to talk about Zane. At least her unasked questions had all been answered. The other Crims had made it here and had hooked up with the Smokies. Maddie had been able to help Zane. The escape had worked perfectly. And now that Tally had made it to the ruins herself, everything was just fine and dandy.
Thank you for waiting for me, she said again softly.
He didn't answer, and they flew the rest of the way without looking at each other once.
Damage control. The path to the new Smokies hiding place wound along streams and ancient railway beds, wherever there was enough metal to keep the hoverboard aloft. Finally, they climbed a small mountain far outside the rusty ruins, the board's lifters clinging to the fallen remains of an old cable car track, up to where a huge concrete dome, cracked open by the centuries, stood against the sky.
What was this place? Tally asked, her voice dry after 3 hours in silence.
An observatory. There used to be a big telescope in that dome, but the Rusties took it out once the pollution from the city got too bad.
Tally had seen pictures of the sky filled with dirt and smoke. They showed those a lot in school, but it was hard to imagine that the Rusties had really managed to change the color of the air itself. She shook her head. Everything that she thought her teachers had exaggerated about the Rusties always turned out to be true. The temperature had dropped steadily as they'd climbed the mountain, and the afternoon sky looked crystal clear to her.
After the scientists couldn't see the stars anymore, the dome was just for tourists, David said. That's what all these cable cars were for. Lots of ways down by hoverboard, if we ever need to get out of here fast. And we can see for miles in every direction.
Fort Smoky, huh?
I guess. If the specials ever find us, at least we've got a chance.
A lookout had evidently spotted them on the way up,